Und den Torah Yom Yitzayin.
Lamed Gimel.
Und der Lamed Gimel.
True Lamed Gimel. You can read more, but then we'll just sit here until 7 o'clock with you guys reading, and that way. It's really long. And it might even go into Yud Chet, the story.
Nice.
So it's like, the story might actually be somewhere between 55 and 60 psukim long. So it's hard to grapple with. If you guys look up when you finish reading, then I know I can begin to talk. If you just kind of get bored, you can look up also, I guess. So let's begin with a strange point. It's probably worthwhile to read through every single one of these psukim, pasuk by pasuk, and explain it. But we can't do that. We don't really have the time for that. So what I want to do is try to approach this a bit top down for right now. And let's begin with the following, as to why I told you to end where I asked you to end. So let's read the last few psukim, which give us a sense of what the mahalach of the story here was, so to speak, looking backwards or retrospectively, and I'll explain what I mean. Take a look in Pasuk Lamed Aleph for the moment. And the words that David had spoken were heard, and they were told to Shaul. He was taken to Shaul. Pasuk Lamed Bet. And David said to Shaul, Al yipol leiva adam alav, let a man's heart not fall within him. Avd chayelech v'nucham imi plishti hazeh. Your servant, i.e. David, will go and fight with this plishti. David, you're just a young lad, and he's a trained warrior from his youth. So the part of the story I asked you to read ends with, I will call this the proposal of David, or the first proposal of David, right? David is brought in front of Shaul HaMelech, and he proposes and says, I will go and fight the plishti. And Shaul turns him down and says, oh no, you're just a young kid, you're just a nar, forget about it. Now, why did I break off the story here? I think to some extent, much of what has happened until this point has been building up to this point of conversation, dialogue, proposal and rejection, as the case may be, by David. And on some plane, it almost feels like everything until this point, the first 31 or 32 psukim our introduction, almost, right? Their introduction leading up to this point in time where David is taken in front of Shaul. He makes his proposal, I'm going to go fight the Plishti. Shaul says, no, you're just a nar, and then things will continue on from that point. And this itself is really, really interesting. I'm going to call this let's say this is Pasuk Lamed Aleph, was when the words were heard and David was taken. So we have a 30 pasuk long, a 30 verse long introduction to the story proper, I guess, of David and Goliath on some plane. That's really interesting. You have a 30 pasuk long introduction, and we'd like to do more with this introduction than say it's just an introduction. So what I want to try to do today is to start to do something with this, you know, this very, very long introduction to the story of David and Goliath per se, and see what we can do with it. That's kind of the first point I want to make. Now, what I would like to ask for is if anybody wants to do a chalukah of these first 33 psukim, a very gross one. I mean, there may be like 15 little subsections, but a very broad, maybe try for a very broad chalukah as to what's going on, which I think is helpful, or ask particular questions or other comments, or what do you guys have to say? Yeah, Adin.
Question. I don't really understand like why they're accepting his proposal or why they're listening to this big guy's proposal. Like it seems that you have an army on one side of the valley, you have an army on the other side of the valley. There's one huge guy that says, okay, let's do a one-on-one thing, which no one has any shot against me. Why in the world are they saying are they accepting?
Okay, I think are they accepting it? What pasuk makes you think they're actually accepting this proposal?
They hear it and respond.
Let's call this the championship proposal, right? No, Adin is right. There's an army on one hill, the army on the other hill, and this one very large, well-armored fellow wades down to the middle and says, it's all about me. I'm the champion, take me on, and everything will rise and fall based upon me. I agree, that's very, very strange. By the way, I would argue that that's actually part one of the story. From about Pasuk Aleph, right? Through Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? Anyways, let's take a look at Yud Zayin Aleph for the moment. Ve'yasvu plishtim et machaneihem le'milchama, ve'yasvu socha asher le'yudah, ve'yachinu bein socha ve'bein azeka, be'efes damim, this place. Pasuk Bet, v'shal ve'ish Yisrael nesvu ve'yachinu ba'emek ha'ila, ve'yachum le'chama le'krat plishtim, they arrange themselves for battle. And you have this picture that I didn't discuss. The army of the Plishtim on one side, the army of Am Yisrael on the other side. Now, as of Pasuk Dalid, you get a bit of a turn, right? And let's take a look at Pasuk Dalid. Vayetze ish habeinayim imachanot Plishtim, Goliath shmo migat. Oh, surprise. His name was Goliath. He was from Gat. Gavoa shesh amot vazaret. So he was 6 amot tall and a tad. How much is that, by the way, in our measurements? 6 amot.
9 feet.
Let's say an amah is a little bit less than a half. Let's say it's about 1.25 feet, okay? He's really tall. He's a very large fellow, right? Now, by the way, there's this claim that he suffered from gigantism, and therefore he's very, very weak as well. And when you suffer from gigantism, your bones are fragile and brittle. And therefore, the one uncovered spot, the skull plate, which would be very thin if you suffer from gigantism, then a rock could theoretically cause a hemorrhage in your brain and cause you to fall backwards as opposed to forwards. Fall forwards as opposed to backwards, correct. Because if you're dead, you'd fall backwards. But if you're alive, then you could theoretically fall forwards from a brain hemorrhage. Now, I think this is a fascinating idea, but al panav, ridiculous. Because if you actually suffered from gigantism, you would be astoundingly weak. And there's one thing the Mikra goes out of its way to tell you over and over in the next few psukim, and let's read them. Pasuk Dalet. Let's say 8 feet. V'kova nechoshet al rosho, v'shiryon kaskasim, fish scale armor, hu lavush, u'mishkal ha'shiryon, 5,000 shkalim nechoshet. It's 5,000 shekel nechoshet was the weight of the armor. That's an incredibly heavy weight. It's approximately 60 kilograms, according to the math. So 60 kilograms comes out over 100 pounds at the very least, maybe more, 120, 130, something like that. U'mitzchat nechoshet al raglav, v'kidon nechoshet ben ketifa, v'chet chanichot kimnor orgim, v'lehevet chanit shesh meot shkalim. So the blade of his spear, of his short range spear, was 600 shekel. Now, okay, we have the picture of the war. We have the picture of the champion of Goliath and his character. And now let's pick it up, I guess, with his challenge, which I guess begins in pasuk chet. Vayamod veyikram arachot Yisrael vayom alem lama teitzu laroch milchama halo anochi haplishti vatem avadim. So Adin, what's your question? Say it again.
I don't understand why they take this deal.
What makes you think they take the deal?
Well, they don't oppose the deal.
They're scared.
Okay, one thing we can agree to is that from Pasuk Aleph through Yud Aleph, we have here section one, which I would call the introduction to the war, the character of Goliath, the proposal of Goliath. And let's look more specifically at the Psukim, I guess. Pasuk Chet, let's pick it up there, where I was up to. Vayamod vayikra al marachot Yisrael, and he called out to the arranged camp of Israel, Vayamod lahem, lama teitzu laroch milchama, halo anochi haplishti. I am the plishti. Matem avadim l'Shaul, and you're the servants of Shaul. Bru lachem ish v'yered alai. Choose a particular man, and he will come to me. Im yuchal, like Gemara talk. Im yuchal lihilachem iti v'kani v'yino lachem l'avadim. Right? Tzad Aleph. If he can be able against me and smite me, then we will be your servants or slaves. V'im ani yuchal lo, if I am able against him, v'kitiv v'item lanu l'avadim v'avadetem otanu. Then you'll be our slaves, and you'll serve us. Now, Adin says at this point in between pasuk tet and yud, apparently Am Yisrael accepts the challenge that everything should be upon the battle of champions. Everything should rest upon the battle of champions. That if the plishti wins, then Am Yisrael be avadim to him, and if the Jewish champion or the Israeli champion wins, then the plishtim would be avadim to Am Yisrael. Now Adin says this is a bad idea to accept this deal. They shouldn't have accepted the deal. What should they have done?
Fought, went to war, attacked them.
They should have attacked, right? So why didn't they? To prevent bloodshed, because they were peace-loving people. They were pacifists, and that's why they accepted the deal. Okay? Does anyone wish to agree or disagree with Adin's claim about there being pacifists and not wanting the deal? What?
I disagree.
I don't actually think that... I don't know, I think that maybe
Adin said
they didn't accept the...
I'm not so sure, Josh.
It could just be that the reason that they didn't just like attack at that moment was because they thought that Goliath was so powerful that they would just like destroy like masses of their army. And like as soon as they rushed in, then Goliath would just like sweep a bunch of them away. And just, like,
well, I think actually, if you pay attention to the language here, it's not. I don't think it's a matter of acceptance of the deal, but I think that there's an incredible amount of fear and panic on the side of Am Yisrael. Now, there are at least two ways we can see that. One is the way the dialogue works. In other words, if Adin was correct that there's an acceptance of the deal, then we require their saying yes. But in point of fact, the Tzad HaYisraeli never speaks in response to Goliath. Look carefully at the verbs here. Take a look in Pasuk Chet, in the middle of Pasuk Chet, or the beginning. Vayamod vayikra marachot Yisrael vayomer lehem lama teitzu laroch milchama. He makes this challenge, right? And it begins with vayomer lehem lama teitzu laroch milchama. And now, after he finishes the challenge at the end of Pasuk Tet, now we come to Pasuk Yud. There's no answer. There's thundering silence at the end of Pasuk Yud, and then what? End of Pasuk Tet. Then we get to Pasuk Yud. Vayomer plishti ani chirafti et marachot Yisrael. Now, how would you translate chirafti?
Angered.
Not angered.
Not
disgraced. I have embarrassed or disgraced the arranged battle camp of Israel. Hayom hazeh, this day. Tznuli ish v'nochama yachad. Give me a man. You have no one who can stand against me. So the double vayomer is a sign of the fact that the challenge is not met. The challenge of Goliath is not met. And furthermore, Goliath says this is a disgrace and an embarrassment to the Marachot Yisrael in his second comment. And now take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, the end of the section. Vayishma Shaul v'chol Yisrael et divrei haplishtia ele. They heard the words of the plishti. Vayichatu vayirumaod. And they were terrified and they were panicked. So we have this picture of this unmet challenge by the plishti champion Goliath. And this is an embarrassment or a disgrace for Malchut Yisrael. And third, there is this fear and panic by Shaul and all of the Machaneh of Yisrael. Now, there's a lot of other language of the challenge that supports this point of the scorn, as we'd say in modern Hebrew, the buz that the Plishti piles upon the Merachat Am Yisrael, that is unmet, and the unmet aspect of the challenge, right? Look at the language. I mean, what does he say here? Going back to Pasuk Chet. Halo Anochi HaPlishti. I am the Plishti. What does that mean, I am the Plishti? I represent all that is great and good in the world of the Plishti. I am the champion. I am well armored. I am strong. I am mighty. Vatem Avadim L'Shaul. And what are you? You're a bunch of servants or slaves. You're lowly. There's scorn here. Brulachem Ish V'Yered Alai. And then he says again in Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Plishti Ani Hikirafti Yitim Rachot Yisrael Yomazeh Tznuli Ish. He asked twice for an ish. And apparently, what don't they have to give him? They don't have an ish. And who's standing right there in the next pasuk? They're panicked, they're fearful. They are exactly the avadim, the low beings that the Plishti has accused them of. There's no ish to stand up against Goliath, and they're panicked and they're fearful. And by the way, who's supposed to be the ish who should stand up against Goliath?
Shaul.
Exactly. And it's Vayishma Shaul b'chol Yisrael. Not just the king Shaul, but amongst all of Am Yisrael, there isn't a single ish who can stand up to the challenge of Goliath. In other words, the story here is not just the introduction to the Milchama, or the character of Goliath, or the challenge of Goliath. It's also what I would call the crisis. There's a fundamental crisis of a lack of ish, of a fear and panic in light of the challenge of the Plishti, of the Kherpa that has been visited upon Marachot Yisrael, and there's no one to stand up to it. And by the way, how long does this go on for? Yeah, the Nikra goes out of its way to tell us this goes on for 40 days and 40 nights, right? Take a look in Pasuk Tet Zion, right? Kind of a strange hanging Pasuk, which is later on in the next segment. Pasuk Tet Zion says, Ve'igash ha-plishti ashkim ba'arevei tetziv arba'im yom. It was 40 days this went on for. Now, 40 days sometimes means 40 in the Mikra, but also 40 days, at least on the symbolic literary level, what does 40 connote in Tanakh?
A long time.
A really long time, right? Arba'im yom, arba'im laila on the mountain, many times over, Moshe says over and over, arba'im shana b'midbar. 40 is a really long time. It's literally 40, but it's also a really long time is the connotation of it. So this busha, this embarrassment, this unmet challenge goes on for a long time. And we see it, by the way, once again in the panic of the average Ish Yisrael. Take a look in Pasuk Kaf Dalet. It comes up one more time when he makes the challenge again. They scatter, they ran away like these little scurrying ants that are afraid of the giant Goliath, right? Now, by the way, so when there's no Ish be Yisrael and they're afraid of the giant and they're running away and they're scurrying away, what does this image conjure up? What does it remind you of? Grasshoppers. Chagavim be'enehem, Miraglim, the giants of Eretz Yisrael. This is a kind of symbolic, metaphorical return to a prior state in the history of Am Yisrael where there was no ish and there was no way to fight, etc. So there's a crisis here. And the first part of the story, Perek Yudzayin Pasuk Al Tivit Al, is the description of the crisis. Yaakov.
Two things. Number one, I was reminded when I was reading the story of the Iliad when
go on.
There's a duel between this is really your point, but there's a duel between Paris, who's like the weak coward brother of the son of the king of Troy, who took Helen and started the war but won't fight
the troublemaker, yeah.
And he's challenged and he actually gives himself up to duel with the leader of the Greek army. So as a parallel to this, Am Yisrael is being challenged, and no one is stepping up for them. And even though it was like conventional, it might have been a conventional thing to do in the ancient world to duel it out one on one, and that would decide the whole thing. Even here, the coward won't stand up for Am Yisrael. Even the hero won't stand up for Am Yisrael.
Even the king won't stand up for Am Yisrael.
Right. And also about running away, like how Am Yisrael runs away. It also could be referring back to the beginning of Shaul's reign, where he was at Gilgal and waiting for Shmuel, and everyone was running away from him. And it's just another harking back that there's no sense of power anymore. This is really just like at the beginning of his reign, they needed someone to bring them together. So to hear, they still need.
Listen, all of these points are good, but it to some extent raises what I would consider a fundamental question in terms of reading the parak. Right, the fact that the challenge is unmet, and the fact that there is this crisis, and there is no Ish. And there is this Bushan Kherpela Marachot Yisrael, and Shaul and all of Yisrael don't stand up to the challenge. What does that say about A, the leadership of Shaul at this point, B, the state of Klal Yisrael at this point? Those are clear issues that I think the introduction is raising for us, and they have to be dealt with in terms of reading the parak. In other words, one question is, what does all this say about the leadership of Shaul and the state of Am Yisrael at this point? And that's one question I want to put on the table for discussion, which we'll get to later on. Yair.
The parak is obviously emphasizing the characters, the individual people in the story, as opposed to Klal Yisrael and like all the Plishtim. Because I mean, you're making a bet one against one instead of just saying, "Oh, Klal Yisrael against all the Plishtim," which would probably be a fair fight, and we would even maybe bet that Bnei Yisrael would win.
We've been doing pretty well previously.
Right. They're awesome, right? So it's exactly the person who's exactly the opposite of the Plishti that fights him. It goes into, we don't really need to know again who David is and where he comes from and how he has all these, like, he's David Hukatan, right? He has older brothers, even though we already know he has older brothers. We know where he comes from. We know he's, you know, he's a shepherd with sheep, which is a very weak, you know, weak thing to do. Shaul specifically tells him, "You're a nar," and this guy, he's not just like, he wasn't even a nar once. He was a fighting man even when he was a nar, and all you are a nar, you know, and,
You just said an incredible number of important things. The point being, everything you said was very, very important. What do you want to do with it?
I'm just trying to set up another. These are two caricatures, like, who are trying to set up the perfect, like, fight against the weak and strong and everything.
Okay, I kind of agree with your basic point. Let's approach it a little bit differently, right? But you said a lot of things that are very important, which you have to get back to. Let's bite off the next section. Okay, let's assume from Aleph through Yud Aleph, roughly speaking, is the introduction. The character of Goliath, the challenge, the unmet challenge, the Bushin Chepra of Am Yisrael. Part 2 begins in Pasuk Yud Bet. What is it about? What purpose does it serve? Where does it run until? Anybody want to take a stab at what we could roughly call the next segment of the story? Yeah, we'll let you continue talking.
Wait, can I say something? You were trying
to... No, you have to answer my question. Sorry. It's like a responsive question answer thing at this point. Yeah, see.
I'd say until Tet Zayin, and it's sort of a prep for the discussion of David's interaction.
You're not wrong, but I just want bigger. I want a bigger
end,
chunk.
Maybe till the end of the whole thing.
Tet. Could be your Tet. Chafei. Why do you think Chafei, Josh? I like Chafei too.
That seems kind of like the end of like the like the contrast of like between like kind of like what's David told to do, and he's like kind of doing everything that he's told to do, like kind of the what's going on around him, and then after that is kind of more like what David does, like in terms of in the direction of actually like,
good. I like Josh's chalukah, and again this is very rough because as of Kaf Vav, I think there's a turn that moves towards the Lamed Gimel section. Let's jump ahead to Kaf Vav, and then working backwards, I'm going to make the claim that Yud Bet through Kaf Hey are some sort of rough unit, and let me explain what I mean. Let's take a look at Kaf Vav. Vayomer David al anashim ha'odim imo lemar, ma ye'aseh le'ish asher yakeh et ha'plishti halaz. What's going to be done to the man that smites this plishti? Ve'isir cherpa me'al Yisrael, and removes the shame and embarrassment from Yisrael. Ki mi ha'plishti ha'arel hazeh? Who is this uncircumcised plishti? Ki cheref marachot elokim chayim? How dare he bring busha upon? Now wait a second, it's very strange that in Pasuk Kaf Vav, David says, "Maye asel ish asher yaket aplishti." He says, "Oh, yes, around. What's going to be done to the man? What's the reward of the man who smites the plishti?" He actually already knows, because if you go back to the previous pasuk, the Pasuk Kaf Hey, "Vayomer ish Yisrael hariitem ish oleh ki lecharefit Yisrael oleh." Did you see this man who came up to embarrass Am Yisrael? Because that's why he came. "Vaya ish asher yakenu yasrenu amelak." The man will smite and the king will make him rich. osher gadol, great riches, that bito yitenu, to give him his daughter, but beit aviv yaseh chavshi b'Yisrael. Now, what exactly beit aviv yaseh chavshi b'Yisrael means, it probably means that his father's household will be untaxed. They won't have to pay taxes. They'll be able to do whatever they want, tax-free, tax breaks situation. In other words, he's actually, in the previous pasuk, in Pasuk Kafei, he's been told the reward that's going, the threefold reward for smiting the Plishti, which is being made very rich and getting to marry the king's daughter, and his family will live tax-free. So he's been told, actually, the champion's reward. So it's very strange that in Kafav, he goes around and begins, Vayomer David el Hashem, Hom Dimi Mole Mor Ma'ase El Shashay Yaketa Plishti. Now, why is he asking? He's trying to stir up because he wants to present himself as the potential champion. In other words, Kafvav begins the stage of David's plan. The world would get around that there's this guy who's asking what's the reward, and he does it twice. And then after he does it twice, what happens in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, jump to Lamed Aleph, he arrives in front of the king, and then he can make his proposal. In other words, part three, from Kafvav through Lamed Gimel, is the plan of David to be brought in front of the king. He's being brought in front of the king and his first proposal. Right? So therefore, I think there's a major turn in Kafav. And what is everything in between? From Yud Bet to Kafei, it's more or less, I would call this the arrival of David, the introduction of David. He comes, he pokes around, he sees his brothers. It's the arrival and introduction of David. And I would call this part two the eventual solution, right? Because Goliath, part one, is the crisis and the busha and the chrapa and the unmet challenge, right? Part two, Yud Bet through Kafhei, is the arrival of the eventual solution. The one who meets the challenge, David on the scene. And then when we get to Kafav through Lamed Aleph, that's already the plan of David, is being born in front of the king, etc. So I kind of like that rough chalukah here. Now, what I think was really interesting was, I want to go back to Yair Strachman's point about part two, the arrival of David, or the introduction of David, the eventual solution. Now, you said some very interesting things there that I want you to follow up on a little bit. So say some of them again in some random order, and let's see if anything I can make of it.
Yeah. Sure. Okay,
so that he's like the exact opposite of Goliath. Okay. He's like a nar. Okay, he's so katan. Yeah. He's little. He's short. We know at the end of the day. What isn't he going to have at the end of the day? Armor. He's not going to have any armor. He's going to have any sword. It's all those things that were introduced as the characterization of Goliath. The armor, the swords, the strength. All those things David is not going to have. So that's absolutely right. That later on, David is going to turn out to be the exact opposite of Goliath and yet defeat him anyway. That's true. Go on. Anything else?
Take the proofs, or you want to make something?
Do you want to have anything else to say besides that?
No. I mean, I could say that I think the point is that Shaul has... But when Goliath is saying all these things, he's saying he is ha-plishti, meaning that the plishtim in general as a group are nothing, but he, like the one person, represents everybody. But with Shaul and Bnei Israel at this point, they're trying to do that. But the point is that the regular, sort of like the average Joe, the guy who isn't really anything, is who is the exact opposite of like the one individual that represents everybody, is the one to defeat the Isher, ha-plishti. Okay.
Okay, we will come back to that. Does anybody have anything else to say? Questions or comments? Because I want to try to show you guys something astounding about the introduction to the David and Goliath story. A fascinating parallel with another part of Tanakh, which some of you might have heard or know of, and it needs to be put on the table and discussed extensively. So I want to get to that, but first let's take some other questions. Yeah, Judah.
So... looking back at the previous parak, I mean, so it ends by saying that because we have the problem of Shaul having the Ruach Ra, and then David comes, and the parak Dafka ends by saying that the Ruach Ra disappears. But then it seems implied that here, and especially like given Chalukah, that Shaul again is sort of like this empty king that doesn't have anything. David's coming to save the day.
I like your point. It connects to something Yair said, and let me raise one of the most famous difficulties about Perek Yud Zayin. I'll raise it in a kind of backwards fashion. Let's take a look at a very strange orphan pasuk, I'll call it. Take a look at Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Dalet, for the moment, okay? Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Dalet is as follows. V'David hu ha-katan u'shlosha gedolim halchu achrei Shaul. So David was the youngster, and the three older brothers went after Shaul. Okay. What should be the next pasuk? Look, what should be the next pasuk after Yud Dalet? Yes, it should go to Yud Zayin. We are here introducing the character of David with this story of he's home with his father, he's got these three brothers who left, and there's going to be this shiluchin, he's going to be sent. So we jump from Yud Dalet, finding out the little brother, we jump straight to Yud Zayin. Vayomer Yishai David bino kach na lachecha eifa takali, take to your brother the measure of roasted grain, vasar alecha mazev, haretz machane lachecha, and run out to the camp. In other words, Yud Zayin is the natural continuation of Yud Dalet. Now, Tet Vav and Tet Zion are this kind of strange Ma'amar Muskar, this kind of strange parenthetical insert that it's not at all clear why they're here as part of the introduction of David. Pasuk Tet Zion is altogether strange when it tells you Vayigash HaPlishti Ashkeim HaRevei Tetzei V'Arbeim Yom. The fact that the Plishti did this for 40 days, where does that belong, by the way? Where does Pasuk Tet Zion belong?
After the end of
Yeah, clearly Pasuk Tet Zion belongs after Yud Aleph, right? Right? And so there's something very, in terms of the ordering of things and the way things are happening here, it's very, very weird. It's almost as if, think of it this way.
Simultaneously, but
as almost as if part one of the story, which is the picture of Goliath, and part two of the story, which is the picture of David, have been intertwined like a lock, right? As if the edges of the fingers have intertwined over each other. So one of the psukim from part one has been moved later, and alternatively, some of the psukim from part two have been moved earlier, right? Now that explains pasuk tet zayin, but it doesn't explain pasuk tet vav. Pasuk tet vav is a very strange pasuk. Take a look at tet vav. V'David holech v'shav me'al Shaul l'ot etzon aviv beit lachem. So David went back and forth from Shaul to check out his father's sheep in Beit Lechem. Who cares? Why is that relevant? He's the katon who's at home. Why do we care what David is doing? The answer is we really, really do care because... What? Oh, hold on a second. No, it isn't. It isn't connected to that at all. No, it's not really connected. It's not really connected. It's really not connected. It has to do with the relationship to Perek Tet Zion. Go back to the end, and this is the issue I want to raise. Take a look at the very end of Perek Tet Zion. Perek Tet Zion has an end, the Ruach Ra story. Okay, take a look at Perek Tet Zion, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, which says as follows. Vayavo David el Shaul, and David came in front of Shaul, Vayamod lefanav, Vayaveu ma'od vayilo nosei kelim, he became nosei kelim. Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayishlach Shaul Yishai leimor, Yamod na David lefanai ki matzachen beinai. So Shaul sent to Yishai, he said, oh, let David stand in front of me because he's found favor in my eyes. Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Vayabayot ruach alokim al Shaul, v'lakach David et hakinoa v'nigen biyado, he would play the harp. V'ravach l'Shaul v'tovlo v'sarah me'elav ruach hara'ah. Now, if Shaul sends to Yishai in Pasuk Kaf Bet, Vayishlach Shaul Yishai leimor, Yamod na David lefanai ki matzachen, let him stand in front of me. Apparently, at that point, it seems that David has switched locales. He has moved from Beit Yishai to Beit Shaul. He lives in the palace, and who knows when Ruach Ra is going to strike. Ruach Ra is a very strange and mysterious disease. You never know when it's coming. So you want to have your harp player right there. You don't have to send for him from who knows how many days away. But the messenger goes from Binyamin to Beit Lechem and back. Until your harp player gets there, your harp player is Amin. You want him there. So it's obvious as of the end of Perek Tet Zion, theoretically, David is located in the Beit Shaul. Now, if David is located in Beit Shaul as of the end of Perek Tet Zion, then what on earth is he doing back in Beit Lechem Yehuda in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Bet? What's he doing in Beit Yishai? Perek Yud Zayin introduces David, to some extent, a second time. There's both a technical problem here, a fundamental problem, and a super fundamental problem. And let me explain what I mean. The technical problem is, what is David doing back in Beit Yishai if he's already been invited to the house of the king to deal with the Ruach Ra problem as in the Perek Tet Zayin? The technical problem is answered by Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tet Vav. That's what Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tet Vav is doing here. It's here to answer the technical problem. V'David holech v'shav me'al Shaul l'ro'ot etzon aviv beit lachem. Although it might sound counterintuitive that the harp player is at a distance when Ruach Ra might strike at any moment, still, nevertheless, the Mikra tells us that David did go back and forth and he went back home and then he would come when summoned. Even after Perek Tet Zion. So the technical problem of where he is has been resolved because apparently you can order up harp playing house calls as the need be, so it's not a problem. But it's just the tip of the iceberg because, as I pointed out here, part two of our story is the introduction of David. We've never heard of this guy before, right? It's this new person who's the Ben Yishai, and he's got these brothers. And the whole story reads like this introduction of this new character. And this raises the question of, you know, the fundamental question of the relationship between Perek Tet Zion and Perek Yud Zion, right? We need to introduce David again? What's going on here? And even a more super fundamental way. Perek Tet Zion is the story of Meshichat David, the rise of David. We already know he's on his way to becoming the king. Well, that already happened in Perek Tet Zion. Why is it happening again in Perek Yud Zion? Because Perek Yud Zion, the end of the way, is again another story of the rise of David. So the fundamental question here, not on the technical plane, is the overall relationship between Prakim Tet Zion and Perek Yud Zion, and that's another issue that we have to discuss. So I'll add that to Adin's point about how do we evaluate Shaul and the lack of the meeting of the challenge and the lack of Ish B'Yisrael. It's also the question of the relationship between Perek Tet Zion and Perek Yud Zion. Now, I want to raise a third issue, and we will finish over that today. Now, it will take a while to raise this one, so let's bear with me. And I didn't know this, but he cited me a strange fact to try to prove it. Let's take a look in our second section here, in Perek Yud Zion. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, Perek Yud Zion, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Let's read carefully here. Perek Yud Zion, Pasuk Yud Gimel says as follows. Even Yud Bet. V'David ben Yishai Efrati, Hazem Yibet Lechem Yudah, Shmo Yishai, below Shmona, Benim had 8 sons. We know that already, right? Vayesh b'mei Shaul zaken b'ban Hashem. He's an old guy. Vayelchu shloshet b'nei Yishai hagdolim halchu achar Shaul milchama. Now, three of his elder sons went. They went somewhere, and they went after Shaul milchama. And these are the names. Da 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 da. V'David hu akatan, and David was the little one. Ushloshet gdolim halchu achar Shaul. So what's the picture have here? We have this picture of a Zaken, an old man, right? And he has many sons. Now, some of these sons, the older sons, are holech l'makom mesuyam. They went somewhere. Halchu acharei. They went to another place. And where's the youngest son, by the way? Where did he stay? He stayed home, okay? It's like it's two went to market and she stayed, you know, little one stayed or whatever it is, right? So that, now, as we go on, something very strange happens. Then at a certain point, the Zaken decides that he's going to send the younger son on a mission to do what exactly? Well, jump down a bit further to Perek Yud Zion, Pasuk Yud Zion, and let's take a look what we have here. Vayem Yishai David b'no kach na l'achecha ifet ha'kli azev asar alechem azev haretz ha'machane l'achecha v'et aseret, go visit your brothers. Take them the stuff, da da da. And then he goes on, v'et aseret charitzei achala v'il tavi l'sar ha'elef v'et achecha tifkod l'shalom. Oh, I want you to check out their peace. Ve'et arubatam tikach, and then bring back their guarantee that they're fine, whatever that means. And we go on to pasuk kaf. Vayashkem David ba'boker v'itoshet atzon al shama v'isa v'ilech kasher tzivo Yishai v'yavod da da da. And what happens? Pasuk kaf bet. V'itosh David et hakelem me'elav ayan ha'shomer hakelem v'yaretz ha'marachah v'yavod v'yish'al le'achav l'shalom. He asks his brothers for shalom. Now, let's add this to the picture, and there are five parts to the picture. One, there's a zaken. Two, the brothers are holech l'makom musuyam. Three, the katan stays home with the zaken. Four, the zaken sends the youngest brother on a mission to visit the other brothers. And five, he gives them specific instructions to check out their shalom. Now, Adin is correct. You'd have to be a complete tembel to miss this. I am, of course, thinking of Perek Lamed Zion in Sefer Bereishit, the story of Yosef and his brothers, right? Let's go back to Perek Lamed Zion, Pasuk. Let's begin in Pasuk Gimel for the moment in Sefer Bereishit. We're going to need to flip back and forth. So take a look over there in Perek Lamed Zion, Pasuk Gimel, where we have the following Pasuk. Okay. We read as follows in Bereishit Lamed Zion Gimel. Says as follows. Israel ahav et Yosef mikol banav ki ben zkunim hulo. Zaken, right? Yaakov is the old man, and Yosef is, of course, the younger or the youngest brothers of the little brother, right? Well, what else? Take a look in Perek Lamed Zion, Pasuk Yud Bet. Perek Lamed Zion, v'yelchu echav lirot et tzon aviyem b'shechem. And they went somewhere. They were holech to a faraway place. Hold on, we'll get to that. Wait, hold on a second. If we go on just a bit further in Pasuk Yud Bet, after they go there. Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'yomer Yisrael Yosef alo achachar ro'im bishkem l'cha v'eshlach aleyem v'yomer lo hineni v'yomer lo lechna re'e et shalom achecha v'et shalom hatzon v'hashiveni davar. So you have all 5 points here. You have the zaken. You have the fact that there are older brothers who are holech l'makom musuyam. You have three, the fact that the youngest brother stays home with the zaken. You have four, the sending on the mission, which involves going there and then bringing something back, etc. And then you have five, the bakashat shalom. So this is effectively a very important parallel in terms of the thematic picture and the shiluchin of David to his brothers, the same as Yosef was sent to his brothers, the katan sent by the zaken to be bakesh shalom. And that's one very, very, there are 5 points, so one very clear parallel between the two stories. Now, Adin thinks there are others. Now, I'm going to call this group one. There are many, many, many other groups of parallels between the two stories, and it's worthwhile trying to do some of them and just to see what's going on here before ending the shiur today. So does anybody have any others? Adin, you could start. Go ahead. What do you got? Yud Zayin Tet Vav. David Halech V'Shav Me'al Shaul Lirot Et Son Aviv Beit Lachem.
Yaakov asks for the Shlom Achecha, but also for Shlom
Hatzon. Yeah, Yaakov. Well, we have to flip back and forth, and I stopped. I took my fingers out. So in Bereishit Perek Lamed Zayin, in Pasuk Yud Dalid, Vayomer Lalech Nara Et Shalom Achecha Et Shalom Hatzon. Go and see the shalom of your brothers and that of the tzon. Or even go, there's tzon in both stories is Adin's point. Or you take a look at Pasuk Yud Bet, so there's tzon in both stories. That's true. But in fact, I think that's only part of it. It's not just that there's tzon in both stories. Tzon are fundamental to the identity of the hero in both stories. In both stories, take a look. You're looking in the wrong place in Bereishit. Take a look in Bereishit Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Bet, which says as follows. Eile tolut Yaakov Yosef ben 17 shana haya ro'eh et echav batzon v'hu na'ar et b'nei. There are two things that are told us about Yosef from the very beginning of the story, the Yosef story. One, he's a ro'eh tzon along with his brothers. Two, he's called a na'ar. Now, both of these features of the identity of the hero as a ro'eh tzon with his brothers and being a na'ar resurface in the David story later on in Sefer Shmuel. And I didn't already point it to the fact that we know that David is a ro'eh tzon from Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tet Vav. V'David halech v'shav me'al sha'ol l'ro'ot et tzon aviv, right? David was a ro'eh tzon. Or David says this later on explicitly in Parak Yud Zayin Pasuk Lamed Dalid. He says, "Ve'yomer David al Shaul ro'eh haya avdechal aviv batzon." I was a ro'eh tzon, right? And there's actually one other place where it seems that the brothers are also concerned with tzon, because take a look in Parak Yud Zayin Pasuk Kavchet. Yud Zayin Kavchet says as follows: "Ve'yishma Eliav." Achiv hagadol b'dabro el anashim v'yichar afeliyah b'David v'yomer lama ze yaradata v'almina tashta ma'at ha-tzon ahena b'midbar. Eliyahu is very concerned with the tzon. So it seems that the tzon is a family project where the hero is specifically known as ro'eh tzon. And of course, in the Shmuel story, David is not just called the ro'eh tzon. Oh, remember? What does Shaul say to him? At the very end in meeting his proposal. Take a look at Yud Zayin Lamed Gimel. Vayomer Shaul David, lo tuchal lelechet el haplishti hazeh lehilachem imo, ki nar ata. So he's a nar. So the second group of parallels is that of the identity of the hero. Part one of that is ro'eh tzon, part two of that is na'ar. And you know, anything funny, one other kind of thing about the identity. What else do we know about David besides that he's a ro'eh tzon, and he's a nar, and he's katan, and he's at home, and he's sent on a mission? He's good looking. And what's the phrase that's used for his good lookingness? Anyone remember where it was?
And for David or Yosef?
David. David is good looking. How do we know David is good looking? Aduma, that's back in Perek Tet Zion. But you know who else thinks that David is good looking? Ironically, it's not just the narrator, but who else thinks that? Goliath thinks that David is good looking. Actually, when David first sees David, that's the thing that strikes him about the guy they sent him. Take a look in Perek Tet Zion, Pasuk Mem Bet, looking a bit further. Vayabet haplishti vayir'eh et David, and he saw David, vayivzeu, and he scorned him, ki haya nar v'admoni im yifei mar'eh. And I was saying, he's a little lad, and he's reddish and ruddy. Yifei mar'eh, is yifei mar'eh. Now, yifei mar'eh, does that remind you of anything about Yosef anywhere? Anyone remember Bereshit Perek Lamed Tet? Pasuk Tet Zion, Pasuk Zion. Bereshit Perek Lamed Tet, Pasuk Zion, says as follows. That's the wrong pasuk.
No, that's right.
Pasuk Vav. Yeah, right before Vayazov Kol Asher Lo Biyad Yosef V'lo Yada Ito Muma Ki Et Halechem Asher Hu Ochel V'hi Yosef Yifei Tohar V'Yifei Mar'eh. Yifei Mar'eh is the third leg of the triad of description of the hero of both stories. They're both Roi Etzon, and they're both Na'arim, and they're both Yifei Mar'eh. And only two people in all of Tanakh are called Yifei Mar'eh. Yosef here in Perek Lamed Chet Pasuk Zion, and David in Perek Yud Zion Pasuk Membet of Sefer Shmuel. It's the only two times that the phrase Yifei Mar'eh appears in all of Tanakh, which is fascinating. Now, I think Chazal caught this last one in the Midrash, because the mention of Yosef as Yifei Mar'eh comes right before Perek Lamed Tet Pasuk Zion. Vayi achar dvar me'ilu v'tiset adunah v'tina al Yosef v'tomer shichvai mi. So Eshet Potiphar said, oh, come sleep with me. So, and she's persistent, da-da-da-da-da. Anybody remember the Rashi? What's the Rashi? Yifei Mar'eh? Yifei before that. Why did this happen to Yosef? No one remembers? Come on, guys, Rashi, third grade, fourth grade. Can someone call up the Rashi on Bar Ilan? It's just such a great Rashi. It's worthwhile taking a look at Rashi on Chumash in Perek Lamed Tet Pasuk Zayin. Anybody have it?